This is episode 87 of Our Modern Heritage, the Home and Family Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Jody Chathy. I had a wonderful interview with Alana Robinson about how our brains function so that we can understand our children's behaviors and know how to respond better to them. Isn't that amazing? I learned so much, and I'm so grateful for this information and how we can learn to be better parents and instill our love and compassion for them so that we can have a better family culture. Thank you so much for listening. Be sure to subscribe and like and rate, and stay tuned to the end for more information about the podcast. I want to welcome Alana Robinson to the show today. For a decade, Alana was a registered early childhood educator and developmental specialist for children with special needs, creating targeted behavior and intervention plans. She spent countless hours reading the latest child development and behavioral psychology research, and she's certified in pivotal response therapy and Shanker self-reg. She's trained in relationship development intervention and collaborative and proactive solutions. She's a mom of two amazing kids and lives in Ontario with her husband of 9 years. Welcome, Alana.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm so excited because, you know, just talking about this whole idea of self-regulation and how that is so crucial to your family culture, and just how, like, it's our self-regulation as parents, and it's also, you know, self-regulation for your kids and how to help them. And so I really appreciated, you know, you explaining what that means. But let's get a little bit of background from you and hear about how you got into this in the first place. What brought you into this special needs world and this idea of self-regulation?
Well, I started when I was in university doing my first degree. I ended up being a nanny for two little boys who have autism. And at that point, I knew nothing about autism, nothing about special needs. A special needs child could have, like, hit me across the face and I wouldn't have recognized it. Like, I knew nothing. But this mom, who I'm still very good friends with, she's been a huge influence on me. She actually took a chance on me and was like, yeah, I need a babysitter. And if you're willing to try, I'm willing to teach you. So I started living with them very shortly after. And they did a form of therapy, as you said in the intro there, that is called relationship development intervention. So it's focused very much on the parents being the master, and not like master as an owner, but like as a proficient person, and your child being your apprentice. So that kind of teacher-student relationship between parents and a child. And it really explains and breaks down how things that most typical children just do work. And so that was really kind of the original seed that was planted, because it broke down that behavior into its more essential component. I was able to start really deconstructing behavior for children and understanding why they do what they do. And so that really kind of sent me down a big old rabbit hole. And for the next couple of years, I just soaked up everything that I could while doing early intervention. And eventually I stumbled upon Shanker self-reg, which Dr. Shanker is one of the leading experts in the world on self-regulation and the science of self-regulation. And so I got certified with him, and it's just completely changed how I parent my own kids, how I work with clients, how I teach other parents to parent their kids, because it changes how you look at children and how you interact and engage with people around you. And so that has such a profound impact on your child's development. So that was kind of how I got into everything. It just snowballed.
No, I love that. That's so cool how it's like, you know, I think that it's so crucial that we learn how to look at our environment and our experiences and follow that. You know what I mean? I think so many people are like, I don't know what to do with my life. And then they don't look at what their immediate need is of what, you know, what they can do to serve and solve problems where they are. So I think that's awesome that that's what you did. So that's really cool. I really want to hear more about this Shanker self-regulation, because like we were saying before we started recording here, you know, that is really something that I'm learning as well, how crucial it is to have a thriving family culture, to be able to understand why our kids are behaving the way that they do, and how we as parents can respond to them. So tell us more about what that means and some of the details getting started.
Absolutely. So with Shanker self-reg, the real core understanding is that there's a model of the brain called the triune brain. And this isn't to exclusion of other models of the brains for other purposes, but this is the one we use for understanding children's behavior. And so the real idea behind it is there's three like layers to our brain that developed throughout evolution. The first one being our brown brain. So our brown brain is like our brain stem. It's literally at the base of our skull. And it's really responsible for fight or flight, right? We hear about that all the time.
That's the first part of your brain that develops when you're, exactly. you're an infant.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people call it the reptilian brain, because if you think of like a crocodile, it's going to snap at a stick if you poke it with it. It's not going to stop to think if that stick is its own tail, if it's a monkey, if it's anything important to it. It just sees a stimulus and it reacts. So that's how the brown brain works. It has no thought. It has no reason. It is just pure instinct. The next layer is our red brain, or our limbic system. So our limbic system has a whole bunch of different parts to it, like our amygdala and our hippocampus and a whole bunch of other smaller areas. But what we're really interested in is our amygdala. And that is kind of like the security system for the brain. It's what is constantly scanning our environment for danger. And when it sees danger, it sends up the alarm and either sends us into fight or flight if it's a life-threatening danger, or it turns off the next layer of our brain, which is our blue brain. So our neocortex, and it's literally at the top of our head. And our neocortex is where we think, we analyze, we learn, we have language, all the stuff that makes us human, really, and civilized humans is all up there in the neocortex. So when we're born, our neocortex is there, but it's gray matter. Little babies aren't analyzing and thinking and using language, because that part of our brain is physically smaller, because we have to get our big heads out of a small hole. So it's there, but it's not wired for sound. It's not all linked up yet. So babies are very much operating off of their red brain, off of their limbic system, which is responsible. It has thought, but it doesn't have reason. And it is responsible for emotion and memory and sensing and feeling. So when you think of a baby, that's basically a baby in a nutshell. And then once they're out into the world, that neocortex starts to get wired up for sound. And then you can generally tell when that's happened, because children start to speak and they start to communicate a little bit more intentionally, and they start to analyze and look for things. One of the big first neocortical leaps is object permanence. So when a baby, you put an object down and cover it with a blanket, the baby understands that the object is still underneath the blanket. It hasn't disappeared into the ether. When we get a danger signal, basically our red brain is always monitoring our blue brain. And if we get a danger signal, our red brain goes, you're not responsible for keeping us safe and alive, so we're going to cut the power to you. And now I'm in charge. And I'm just going to keep us safe. Obviously, that makes it very difficult when parents are trying to teach their children how to behave and they're in the throes of a tantrum, or they're in the throes of misbehaving, being defiant. A lot of parents will try to reason with their child. And you can't do that when the part of their brain that has language and analysis and reason isn't getting any oxygen and isn't getting any blood.
It's not working.
It's physically impossible for them to understand you in that moment. So understanding that triune brain model and being able to pinpoint which part of their brain your child is operating off of at any given time, which is usually pretty easy, because if they're being super emotional, which a lot of kids really are, you can tell that they're operating off of their red brain, versus if they're calm and listening and able to communicate clearly and stuff, then that means that they're operating more off of their blue brain. Understanding the different amount of energy that those parts require.
Right.
So we were talking before about how there's the idea that you have like a gas tank every morning when you wake up, and depending on how you're feeling and how your night was and what your emotional state is, you either have a lot of gas in your tank or you have a little bit of gas in your tank. And then the definition of stress in self-reg is anything that you expend energy on. You go throughout your day and literally everything you do sucks a little bit of gas out of that tank. And depending on how stressful it is for you, it either takes a lot of gas or a little bit of gas. And where we see misbehavior, which is actually stress behavior, is when you're putting a demand on your child and the amount of energy that they need to use to fulfill that demand outstrips the amount of energy that they have in their tank to do it. And that's when we see the hitting, the biting, the freaking out, the defiance, the swear words, all that stuff that drives us crazy as parents.
Right. So Alana, let me see. So what you're saying,
as you were describing the three brains, and I just want to kind of like recap so that we all are on the same page and understanding, because you use a lot of techno.
I know. And
I just want to like translate some of that a little bit, because like you were talking about the brown brain, the red brain, and the blue brain. And so what I interpret that to mean is that there's like your reactive part of your brain that is your sensory motor, keeps you alive, is reactive, it's your reflexive and things like that. And then there's the neocortex, which is your thinking brain that you said when we're first born, it's mostly gray. Yeah. And that's to say gray versus white. When you have more white matter in your brain, then that you have more of the myelination. There's development there.
Yeah.
It's wired to connect those nerves to think properly and process things. Yeah. And so what I kind of interpreted was like the red brain and the limbic brain, the amygdala, you know, that's kind of like our hormones, our reactive. Those are the things that are designed to keep us alive. And that those are the things that as children, that's like their first response, right? Like that's all that they really know. And that's all that's really fully developed is their survival mode. But that's also a part of your brain that doesn't require a lot of energy, right? To keep it going. It's just survival. And so really that's the part that when you run out of energy, it's still there. It's still going and it's keeping you reactive to the things that are happening around you. And that it takes more development, more capacity, more maturity to be able to activate your blue brain, really. That part of your brain that is able to think things through, to reason, to pause and take a breath, or, you know, things like that, you know, things that take a lot more maturity. And so I think what you're saying is that a lot of times parents, we kind of like forget that in a way, that our kids first are not fully developed in like biologically to think that way. And second, we don't always give them the space to learn how to reason and develop those things, because all we see is them being reactive.
Totally. And that's where parents, that's where the whole energy expenditure and the understanding of the triune come together. Because if you're trying to get your child to use their executive functioning skills, which are in their blue brain, so that's planning and prioritizing, organization, task initiation, emotional control, impulse control, flexible thinking, self-monitoring, working memory, all that good stuff. If you're trying to get your kids, which those are the tools that we use to literally do everything, if you're trying to get your child to use those tools, but they don't have any oxygen, any blood going to that part of their brain, you're asking them to do a physically impossible task. And so it's going to take them a lot more energy to access and use those skills because they're trying to force it if they're in a red brain state. Being aware of your child, not only your child's energy level and how, where they are and what has already during the day sucked their energy out, but also being aware of if they're super emotional, if they're super unreasonable because the red brain doesn't have reason, understanding that you're going to have to calm them down and fill their cup a little bit before you can attempt in any way, shape, or form to get that blue brain to function and to appeal to their sense of reason and their sense of learning and that they'll hold on to that information. That's kind of the angle that I come at everything from, is that we want to A, build up those skills and get them more proficient at using those skills, because practice makes perfect is a cliche for a reason. It's true. So the more you use those skills, the bigger and stronger those synapses become. And the easier it is for us to use them, the less energy it takes for us to use them. But then also being aware of your child's energy consumption and what part of their brain that they're using in any particular point in time. Because if you're asking them to use skills that are difficult for them to use because they're weak, they're new, executive functioning skills only really start developing around the age of 2. And that's when we kind of start expecting children to act like human beings instead of babies. So being aware that if you're asking them to use skills that they're weak in, that is going to be a huge stressor on them and they're not going to have much energy to do anything else.
Wow, that's so important. That's going to just drain them. And then it's like they spend all day at work, at school, being expected to use their blue brain, being reasoning, planning, thinking, doing all this stuff. And then of course they're going to come home totally exhausted, or if there's any kind of task like that. I feel like this is a really interesting topic too, because like I'd read Switch by Chip and Dan Heath, and their thing was that self-discipline is a unlimited resource, and they're absolutely right. But I think also what you're saying at the same time is that our self-discipline is also something that we can grow, so that with the practice, we can extend the life of our self-discipline, because exactly. We know how to recuperate our energy, or we just know how to use our energy more wisely, or all that kind of stuff that
we
helps
recognize us. That we are low energy. Like, as children don't really recognize, and all it takes is to go to a children's birthday party and you can see this play out. Children don't recognize when they're starting to run out of gas. They don't have that understanding or the ability to balance their red and blue brain enough that they can go, oh, I'm starting to get hangry. I'm starting to get too excitable too fast. I'm starting to not be aware of where my body is in space. These are red flags that I need to take a break. I need to go eat something. I need to go and maybe have a little bit of time in solitude. I need to go sit down, take a couple deep breaths. Those are things that we learn to do as children, and then generally get practice doing it, so that hopefully by the time we're adults, we have the ability to recognize those things as, oh, I'm running out of steam here and I need to pull back, or I need to leave, or I need to take a break. Kids suck at that. So it's our job as parents to be monitoring them to a certain extent. And the way that Shankar puts it is lending your blue brain, right? Because you can't, if your child's blue brain is under construction, think of it like a house that has its first floor, but the second floor is still very much just the frame. They can't always use their blue brain. So through the interbrain connection that we have with our children, we can kind of lend them ours. And we do that by helping them regulate, or what they call co-regulating. So being that more knowledgeable other who can step in and be like, look, pay attention to your body. You look like you're very hungry. You look like you're tired. Let's go take a break, and help them recognize those signals in their own body a little earlier than they otherwise naturally would, so that you can hopefully avoid the meltdown. You can hopefully avoid the freaking out and the defiant.
There's a couple of things that I really liked from that. First of all, I really like that you had said that stress is any kind of energy expenditure. There's good stress, there's bad stress, and there's just existing. You know what I mean? I think that even just like there's like time passing is even like expending your energy. And so it's like there's at some point you've got to be able to like recuperate that. And I really appreciated too that you had talked about being able to notice as parents when our kids are being overstimulated, to be able to know how to help them to regulate, to co-regulate. I love that term. That's really great, because I think that a lot of times parents, you know, everybody falls into this trap, I think, especially without this knowledge. Like, we want to be like, hey, regulate yourself, or, you know, we're like, stop acting that way, or, you know, just trying to be forceful rather than using it as a teaching opportunity or a co-regulating opportunity. A lot of what I see, and I just posted an article recently about this, because it was like the difference between disciplining, punishing our kids versus actually getting down at their level, figuring out what's going on with them, and using it as a teaching opportunity.
Well, and it's so funny. I think that's one of the biggest misunderstandings for parents, is the difference between punishment and discipline. Punishment, the literal definition of punishment is retaliation. Is retribution. Like, you're getting back at your kids for not knowing what to do. Whereas discipline is much more that teacher, master, apprentice relationship we were talking about, where the root word of discipline is disciple, as in student. So when you discipline someone, you are teaching them. And parents seem to feel like if they don't punish their kids, they're not disciplining them. And the opposite is true. You can discipline your children without punishing them. And it really is just that matter of thinking of what do I want them to do, and why aren't they doing it? How can I teach them? What information are they missing to do what I want them to do? Because kids do well if they can. They want to do well.
They want to do well. They want to please. And I think that being a co-regulator versus the parent who just wants to maintain control, you know, because I think that that's where the punishment comes from, is it becomes this power struggle. And when you take that role of boss and subordinate versus mentor and mentee or master and apprentice, then you're creating more stress. You know, you're not, rather than coming in and saying, I want to help you self-regulate and figure out, or co-regulate and figure out what's going on. If you're coming in going, I'm just going to punish you because you're misbehaving.
Because you don't know what to do.
Yeah, as parents, we don't know what to do sometimes.
Well, even when children typically misbehave, it's because they're trying to get a need met and they just don't know how to meet it. So they're just literally throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping something sticks. Generally, they're going to try and take the path of least resistance. And this is where the concepts like extinction bursts come in, where when you're trying to shape those behaviors, sometimes you get like a really upset child who just goes straight into brown brain because they just don't know what to do. Even though you're trying to teach them, their brain is having such a hard time making that connection that they just go into their most primitive state and they're just like, I'm in danger and I'm going to try and keep myself safe. Yeah. And understanding that that's not misbehavior. It's not a failing on you as a parent if your child goes into that state. Sometimes you got to go through it in order to come out the other side.
That's the only way they know how to regulate is to explode, right? Like, exactly. They're like, okay, I've hit my threshold. How do I let this out? I explode. And then it's like, okay, after the explosion, it's like that movie, the kids movie Inside Out, you know, where it was like, yes. She just needed to be sad so that she could regulate, you know, she could get through
so
that.
She could regulate. Exactly. Yeah. So parents get very, very stressed. Personally, we tend to also equate stress with worry as adults, because that's where we spend a lot of our energy. Like when I tell parents that their child is stressed, they'll go, oh, no. She's not stressed. She has, you know, a loving family and food in her belly and a roof over her head and tons of toys. She has nothing to be stressed about. And I'm like, I'm not saying that your child is worried about something or that they feel unstable. Stress literally is just energy expenditure. And what I'm telling you is that your child, the demands on your child are outstripping the amount of energy she has to give. And divorcing those concepts of stress and worry when it comes to children, because that's not really how children stress. They stress because they're trying to learn things, yeah, possibly at a pace that's just a little too fast for them.
And I think too, another thing that we forget or take for granted is that even devices and media are overstimulating.
Yes.
That kids need recovery from too.
Yes. There's a big difference between quiet and calm. I think people look at children on tablets and they're quiet. They're sitting and they're focused on something. And they equate that with calm, which is calm is a state where you're in homeostasis. Everything is balanced. You're not expending too much energy. You're also replenishing it as you expend it. Like you're in a very neutral state. When children are on tablets, they're not in a neutral state. They're in a very highly engaged state. We just can't see it because it's all mental versus physical. But when you look at children, they've actually done a couple studies where they've hooked children up to electrodes and they've put them on an iPad to play whatever game they want. And the children neurologically and physically go into the same state that tribal people go into when they're hunting. Like when you're on the hunt and you're trying to track an animal, it's the same. We've adapted now to switch on that same hyper alert state when we're using devices, when we're doing more digital things in the world. So when children are sitting there on a tablet, it's easy to think that because they're quiet, they're calm. But in reality, they're expending a lot of mental energy because they're very, very alert, hyper alert. And recognizing that putting your child on a tablet isn't necessarily rejuvenating their energy sources, yeah, that it's draining it. Just because they weren't running around and bouncing off the walls doesn't mean that they were rejuvenating their energy.
Wow. Yeah, that's so fascinating. And it's so easy to forget that, because when sometimes it's like our solution for when kids are bouncing off the walls, we go, just turn on the TV so, yeah, that they'll calm down. And it's like, but you're saying like, that's not.
You're actually making the situation kind of worse when you do that. And this is where self-reg gets kind of complicated, because what one person finds calming, another person will find stressful. So it can be, especially when you have like an introverted parent and an extroverted child, just by definition, introverted people get their energy, replenish their energy by being alone, versus extroverted people replenish energy by being around people. So it can cause some tension, because you've got a child who, you know, you might be trying to get them to replenish their energy the way that you replenish your energy, but it doesn't translate to them because they're their own person. So we kind of have to go into this kind of detective state as parents, figuring out what it is that actually fills our child's tank. Like my nephew will listen to this like awful heavy metal that makes like puts me on edge. And he's like, no, I feel so good after I lit. Like I just go into my room and I crank it up, and he is like totally like blissed out in his room. He'll do so much homework if he can have his sound up high. Whereas I walk in the house and I'm like, oh my God, what is that sound? And it immediately puts me on edge and me on high alert. It's draining for me. So it's hard when you have, especially with little kids, and they can't be as explicit as a teenager would, that where you're trying to figure out what it is that actually fills their tank and actually makes them feel better. And for some parents, it's a real mind bend when you're like, oh, your child actually gets a lot of energy from running around outside. So they need more of that in order to behave well. And they're like, but they're running around. They should be exhausted. And I'm like, but what is exhausting for you is not necessarily exhausting for your child. So it can cause some tension. And it really makes us go into like detective mode, because we often have to let go of what our preconceived notion of calming looks like.
Wow, that's a good reminder, because that's so true. We think, oh my goodness, why aren't these kids exhausted yet? But yeah, there's different ways that we all get our energy. And so my question though is then, you know, as parents, we also need to learn how to regulate. And then, you know, because we see our kids, we're thinking they should be exhausted, but then, and it's exhausting us. And so sometimes I think we forget to self-regulate when our kids stress us out or other things are stressing us out, and we take it out on our kids sometimes because we don't know to recognize our own, you know, need for self-regulation.
And it's, I find it so interesting when parents are like, you know, we were at the park and I could see that he was getting out of control and he was getting wound up. And I was starting to feel out of control and like I was exhausted and I just wanted to go home and eat. But he was having such a good time that I just waited and I thought, oh, let's see how this plays out. And then inevitably they go to leave the park half an hour, 45 minutes later, and everything goes boom.
Yeah.
And it's like you ignored that sense that you had that was telling you, we're running out of gas. We're both running out of gas. We both need a break. We both need to go home and go somewhere that we are physically safe so that we're using less energy. It does require a certain amount, as I said, of awareness and of being, once you kind of understand those three layers and the whole gas tank analogy, it becomes really easy. My favorite one is when parents are like, I tried to talk to her about it and she just kept saying, I don't know, or go away. And you're like, hey, so that was your red flag that her red brain wasn't in control because she wasn't being reasonable. She was physically telling you, I can't process this information right now.
Right.
That was your red flag that you needed to leave or to have a snack or to take a break in some way, shape, or form. And once you can read your child like that, it makes these situations so much more predictable for you because you can see the writing on the wall and suddenly your child's behavior isn't a surprise anymore.
That's so cool. So what are some of the go-to techniques that you like to recommend for helping parents to help their kids regulate and get their blue brain back in charge?
Breathing, deep breathing. If you have a children's yoga class that you can sign your child, or a mommy and me yoga class that you can sign up for with your kids, take it. Especially if there's one that is centered specifically on breathing, because breathing and how we breathe makes such a difference in how we speak, how people understand us, how much oxygen is actually in our blood at any given time. Mm-hmm. Oxygenating our blood is really important and something that we obviously don't consciously think about. But when we're getting stressed, we start to take shallower breaths. We start to breathe more from our upper chest. And so we're not getting as much actual oxygen into our brain, which means that our brain is now sucking energy trying to function and it's not getting anything replenished. And that's when our red brain monitors our glucose levels. And when our glucose levels go too low, it pulls the plug on our blue brain. If we're not getting the oxygen up, we're going to start burning glucose. And then very quickly, our energy reserves are going to get sucked up. Breathing and taking those deep breaths really helps to relink the blue brain and the red brain. And because you have to think about it, because generally taking deep breaths is not something that you do automatically, because you actually have to consciously think about it, it helps to reignite those neural pathways and get everything flowing back and forth again. So deep breathing, big one. There's also a YouTube channel called Cosmic Kids Yoga. Mm-hmm. And that's a great one. I love putting on her Zen Den videos. And for my kids, when I'm like, I can't I can't deal with this right now, like, because I'm stressed out, but you're also going into red brain. So I'm going to put on one of these Zenden videos. You're going to do some deep breathing and calm down. I'm going to go and do some deep breathing separately and calm down, and then we'll come back and deal with this. Another one that I really like is guided meditation, and just having some either ones that are recorded, which we use a lot. I've recorded a whole bunch for my kids so they can go up to, like, I have an Amazon Alexa that I've loaded them onto. And so they can go up to it and be like, I need to calm down. And it'll start playing a meditation, a guided meditation for them. But also just having some scripts available to me that I just, like, keep on my phone. We do this a lot in the car. When, as I said, you've had, like, a stressful transition out of going somewhere, or you're going to go somewhere that your child is on edge about, leading them through a guided meditation is a really great way to kind of A, get them deep breathing, and B, get them out of their head and get them reconnected to their body so that things are flowing again. The other thing I really love are visuals, which I think as parents, we overlook a lot for kids, because we have phones and we have calendars and we have signage that is literally posted all around us that gives us information, reminds us of things we need to remember. But we expect a little kids to remember a lot of things off the top of their heads and just pull it out at the snap of our fingers. So with visuals, because little kids can't read, it gives them pictures to remind them what they need to do. And even just like a first then board, which is one of my most powerful tools, where you're just like, okay, first we're going to go in the car, then we're going to go to the park. Or first we're going to be at the park, and then we're going to go home. And it just helps make things a little bit more predictable for children, so they're not having to expend energy remembering it. And it's just those little tweaks that help. I have a whole thing in a strip in my front hall for my kids that tells them everything they need to do to leave the house. They need to go to the bathroom. They need to wash their hands. They need to put on their shoes. They need to get a hat. They need to check outside and see if they need a coat. If they need a coat, they need to put it on. They need to check that they have their backpack, their water bottle, and their sunglasses. And so it's all there in step-by-step format, but it's all pictures.
Underneath.
So when I say go get ready to go outside or go get ready to leave, for children, that's a lot of, and parents are always saying, you know, we can't get out the door. Getting out the door is so stressful, because your child's trying to remember all these steps off the top of their head, and it's taking a lot of energy. And then when you expect them to do it quickly, they're like, I don't have the energy to remember all this shit and also do it fast. Like, I can't do it. And then meltdown.
Yep, so, everybody explodes.
Exactly. And so this way, when you have the pictures up there for them, my son just has to follow along and go, okay, I did that. Next, I have to find my backpack. Okay, where's my backpack? And then he just keeps going down the list. It takes a lot less energy for him. I don't have to stand over there nagging him to do it. And so he can do it faster. It doesn't take as much energy. And then we get out the door without anybody losing their mind. Looking for those opportunities around your house for routines where they're replicable. Your child has to do the same thing every freaking time. Those are great opportunities to just reduce the stress a little bit. Put up a visual strip. And it seems so asinine. Parents will be like, I don't think my five-year-old needs this. Well, okay, try it and come back and tell me if I'm wrong. Because and everybody always comes back and they're like, oh my God, bedtime went so much easier, even though we've literally done the same bedtime routine since they were born. Bedtime went so much easier just because I put up this little strip of pictures. And it's like, well, yeah, even though they've done it every day since they were born, it still takes energy to remember all the steps. And this way they just have to go, yeah, done. Okay. Oh, I need to go get a glass of water. And off they go without having to use all that energy for recall instead. They can use it to stay calm. Visuals are like a lifesaver.
Yeah. Well, they don't have to expend all that extra energy thinking about all those things. And then when they're finally ready for bed, you're all like, just go to bed. You know, you hate each other and you're freaking out.
Well, bedtime especially is a low energy, high tension time, right? Because you're running on fumes just by definition of it being bedtime. And then they have to try and get through this routine, which yes, they've probably done the same since they were born. But as I said, it still requires recall. It still requires energy to do it. So any way that you can reduce the energy expenditure that they need to output, the better. And it's amazing how independent children can be when we give them the courtesy that we've given ourselves and give them reminders.
Isn't that funny? That's so funny. We expect kids to do more than we do ourselves. That's so awesome. I love that so much because I think that it's such an awesome reminder to to give your kids more grace, to give yourself more grace, you know, and just recognize how much energy we drain. I mean, even just saying, hey, it's time to go to bed. I think that that like drains all their energy, right? Yeah. As soon as you say that, like transitions are always huge energy drainers.
Totally. And I hate bedtime. Everybody's like, oh God, I love bedtime. I hate bedtime because I'm low energy and high tension because I've been working all day and I've been dealing with my kids all day. My kids are home with me all the time. And then they are low energy, high tension. And it's just like a recipe for disaster because I'm like, I just need the way that I know to reduce my stress is to get you in bed. And they're so low and on gas that they're just like, I literally don't have the energy to open my mouth right now.
Yeah. Can't even think straight.
So being aware of that though has made it a lot easier for me. Like instead of being so worried and so stressed out and putting so much pressure on us to get through it as quickly as possible, it's a lot easier for me to be like, okay, what is sucking all this stress and how can I reduce it? Things like just getting my kids electric toothbrushes so that I'm not the one having to like scrub in there. I can just like guide it. That was a stress reducer for me. The stress reducer for them because they find it funny and think it tickles. Looking at those opportunities when you have a stressful situation that is constantly stressful, and being able to go, where are we expending too much energy and where can I just change that?
Yeah.
Where can I reduce that energy expenditure? And then you'll be amazed at how much smoother your whole life goes. Whenever you look at something and go, how can I reduce the stress of this?
Well, even just calming down. I think a lot of times as parents, we have agendas, right? We want to get out the door. We want to get them to bed. We want to get them, you know, leave the park or different things like that. But being able to slow down and recognize their needs and maybe even pausing our agenda so that we can meet those needs and help them to reconnect their blue brains or whatever it is that they need. That to me, like, cause that's something that I've definitely started practicing in my own life and our family. Like, okay, I need to just let go of my agenda. Sometimes I think I just have to put my kids' needs first and then just be like, okay, if we end up taking half an hour extra to get ready for bed because they just want to cuddle with me or read a book with them or something like that, then that's what they need. And that will help us to connect and also co-regulate. And then they're more willing to head off to bed. I mean, that sounds stressful as a parent. And sometimes it is. Like sometimes it's draining. But once
we're like, as parents, we have our own stress. We have our own gas tank and we also have our own proficiency at using our executive functions.
Yeah.
So it's also a really great way to give yourself some grace because when you have a child who you can see is ramping up or you're having a difficult day and you can go, I'm getting really irrational right now. I'm slipping heavy into red brain. Now is not the time to be having a parenting intervention or to be becoming a hard ass or introducing new concepts or trying to get out that door or whatever it is. I need to fill my own cup. I need to take a break. So it's okay. I'm going to go have a cup of tea on the front porch and I'm just going to deal with everything after. Being able, again, just to recognize where that energy is getting sucked out of so that you can give yourself some grace too.
Well, yeah. And I think, well, like with the bedtime example, I have the capacity to self-regulate more than my children do. So it's like, I know that if I'm just like, okay, once I get through this, I can take the time for myself first too, and just let go of that agenda, just calm down. Just be like, let's just relax. It's just
totally. I love when I'm able to recognize that something is stressful and be like, okay, I know like my husband's deployed right now and he usually does bedtime because I find it so stressful, but I have to do bedtime because I'm the only one here to do it now. So I've recognized that, okay, this is a stressful thing for me. So we're not going to have like 4-course meals before bed because that's
going to drain your energy.
That's going to drain my energy. And then I have no energy left to do bedtime. So I have completely like shelved dinner time. I'm like, okay, well, you're going to eat cereal and you're going to eat, you know, some processed foods. And that's a compromise that I'm making on our priority list so that I'm not getting to bedtime already so low on energy that I can't get through it with you.
Yeah. I like that. I like what you're saying there because that was something that I've heard too, is like the more you can systematize things and make them routines, that will expend less energy. Like you've been saying, like teaching our kids how to expend less energy by implementing routines, implementing the signs, the visuals, you know, all those things help to create systems so that it expends less energy. That's why you hear like CEOs CEOs will like wear the same thing every day because they, you know, because it expends less energy to not have to worry about or think about what they're going to wear for the day, or doing things like laying out your clothes at night so that the next day you know what you're going to wear, or setting out, making, preparing food and lunches the night before.
Yes. Well, and like things like for me, those meal boxes where you like order them online and they ship you all the stuff. My husband was like, why? What is the point of this? I'm like, you don't understand how much energy it takes for me to plan a week's worth of meals, make sure we have all the ingredients, go and buy the ingredients we don't have, come home, prepare it, make it, and then clean
it. You're exhausting me already, Elena.
That is a huge drain on my energy. Yeah. So you might not get it, but for me, being able to just go, yeah, we're going to have tacos and chicken pot pie and whatever, a rice bowl this week, and they're going to ship it directly to my door. That is a huge stress reducer so that I have energy to do other things. I think a lot of people, when they do things like that, that are conveniences, there's a lot of shame involved, especially with moms, where we're like, oh, I could do this myself. I shouldn't need to hire someone to do this, or I shouldn't need to have somebody do this for me. And we guilt ourselves into overexpending our energy. And then we guilt ourselves because we've got a really short fuse.
Yeah.
And whereas recognizing, okay, well, yes, I can probably meal plan by myself, but it is such a huge stressor for me that if I don't, I'm a much happier person. I'm a much more relaxed person, which means my whole family is more relaxed. Okay, so maybe this isn't such an extravagance then. Same with things like, I recently hired a house cleaner and my mom was like, you can clean your own house. And I was like, but I don't have time. Mm-hmm. And when I'm trying to run a business and look after my children and keep the house clean and be my husband's secretary, that's too much energy expenditure. I don't have the gas in the tank to do all of those things. So having a cleaner come once every 2 weeks to really do a deep clean removes that stressor from me. So then now I can redirect that energy to other things that are more important. Again, with that giving ourselves grace.
Yeah. Well, I love those two strategies, systematizing things, routines, and then outsourcing. You know, and you're right, there is a lot of that stigma and of shaming around outsourcing, but it's like, girl, give yourself a break. Like, it's how much is it to ask somebody to come clean your house every 2 weeks? It's probably maybe like $50-$100. I mean, it's like,
well, even if that's not in your budget, things like asking your parents to watch your kids, like that is something I've struggled with because I don't want to burden my parents or my friends. So then you're like, okay, well, I'm just going to be with my kids all the time, except that is a drain for me. I'm an introvert. Yeah. I can't be with people all the time. And if the only time that I get when I'm not with people is when my kids are asleep, that's not enough energy replenishing for me. I very quickly become a really bare person to be around. So again, getting over asking for help, saying, you know, I really need half an hour or an hour to myself to go to the gym or sleep or have a cup of tea without anybody speaking to me, and making time, working it into your schedule and into your life, those things that are going to fill your cup so that you actually have the energy to parent your kids.
Elena, I loved everything we talked about. This has been so uplifting and rewarding, and just these ideas are so awesome. Thank you so much. I'm so glad you came on the show and we could talk about these things. Where can we find you and connect with more of this information?
You can find me. My website is alanarobinson.com, 2 L's, 1 N. Or you can find me on Facebook. Come join my group, The Parenting Posse. And it is 5,000 women strong, 5,000 plus women strong, I think, at this point. And it is a really, really strong community. We don't let any guff happen where it's very heavily moderated. So everybody it's a tight ship. And everybody is just so super supportive. And it's a really great place to kind of get more ideas, connect with people who are really committed to this idea of reducing your stress.
Thank you so much, Elena.
Thank you for having me. It's been a joy to just chat about this stuff. I could talk about it forever.
Thank you so much for listening. That was so awesome, right? And I've learned so much throughout this journey of hosting this amazing podcast. But the Home and Family Culture podcast is going to be retiring for now. And I'm going to be creating a new path and new content. I'm starting a new podcast called Our Modern Heritage Legacy Secrets. So keep an ear out for that. I'm going to be launching the trailer for that soon in the next couple of weeks so that you can know what this is all about. It's going to be so amazing and I'm so excited. Please come find out more on facebook.com/Jody Chafee or on my business page, facebook.com/familycultureconversations, or in the group that I'm hosting and growing, facebook.com/groups/familycultureconversations. I will see you there. And remember that if you want to change the world, go home and love your family.